Good morning. Is anybody here? Good morning. The last time I spoke to a group was on Sunday the 27th of January in an Angolan town called Lobito in Benguela State. And I spoke to 5,585 people who were gathered together from the churches in the local area to worship God and to celebrate World Leprosy Sunday. Some people left home at 4 o'clock in the morning, which put into perspective my morning about having to be up and out before 8 o'clock. They came carrying their chairs and they came carrying their umbrellas because it was over 31 degrees in the sun. I wonder if Glasgow could have brought together 5,585 people. I wonder if Glasgow could have organised. The organisation, the logistics were superb. It made me think of what the feeding of the 5,000 must have looked like. The service was 3 hours and there was lots of speakers. I was only one of them. And, you know, it's a fantastic number here today, and the worship, the singing is great. We have a really good worship band, but I have to say, in comparison, guys, you're just a wee bit bland. Your singing, people, is just a wee bit bland in comparison with people who have a fraction of what we have, but really know how to worship God and really know how to give thanks and have an attitude of gratitude. And we today are marking World Leprosy Sunday, and I have a table at the back with copies of our prayer guide, copies of our magazine and other leaflets. Please help yourself on the way out. On your seat you will have a Heal Nepal booklet and envelope, and I will explain about that later because I'm going to introduce you to the wonderful partnership we have within the UK, with the UK government, TLM England and Wales and Northern Ireland, but I'll explain that later and show a video clip. The passage I've been given this morning as we go through the Sermon on the Mount is very appropriate. It is very appropriate to where we are as the Leprosy Mission Scotland, and for me personally. And because it's a well-known passage to some of us, a passage that we can recite parts of, that we learnt in school, I want to read it from a different translation, because I want us to think about the translation, the words, and not just jump across them because they're so well-known to us. So I'm reading Matthew 6, 19 to 34 from the Message. Don't hoard treasure down here where it gets eaten by moths and corroded by rust, or worse, stolen by burglars. Stockpile treasure in heaven where it's safe from moth and rust and burglars. It's obvious, isn't it? The place where your treasure is the place where you most want to be and end up being. Your eyes are windows into your body. If you open your eyes wide in wonder and belief, your body fills up with light. If you live squinty-eyed in greed and distrust, your body is a dank cellar. If you pull the blinds on your windows, what a dark life you will have. You can't worship two gods at once. Loving one God, you'll end up hating the other. Adoration of one feeds contempt for the other. You can't worship God and money both. If you decide for God, living a life of God worship, it follows that you don't fuss about what's on the table at mealtimes or whether the clothes in your closet are in fashion. There is far more to your life than the food you put in your stomach, more to your outer appearance than the clothes you hang on your body. Look at the birds. Free and unfettered, not tied down to a job description, careless in the care of God, and you count far more to him than the birds. Has anyone by fussing in front of the mirror ever gotten a taller by so much as an inch? in all this time and money wasted on fashion, do you think it makes that much difference? Instead of looking at the fashions, walk out into the fields and look at the wild flowers. They never primp or shop, but have you ever seen colour and design quite like it? The 10 best dressed men and women in the country look shabby alongside them. If God gives such attention to the appearance of wild flowers, most of which are never seen, don't you think he'll attend to you, take pride in you, do his best for you? What I'm trying to do here is to get you to relax, not to be so preoccupied with getting so that you can respond to God's giving. Not to be so preoccupied with getting so you can respond to God's giving. People who don't know God and the way he works fuss over these things, but you know both God and how he works. Steep your life in God reality, God initiative, God provisions. Don't worry about missing out. You'll find all your everyday human concerns will be met. Give your entire attention to what God is doing right now and don't get worked up about what may or may not happen tomorrow. God will help you deal with whatever hard things come when the time comes. As some of you know from hearing me speak before, God has given the Global Fellowship of the Leprosy Mission a huge vision. Along with other leprosy organisations, we are working towards zero transmission, zero disability and zero discrimination. And to that, the Leprosy Mission has added no new cases by the year 2035. That is hugely exciting, very motivating and not a little scary because it's a huge ask. And we have a new global strategy which will lead us at least for the next 5 years towards providing these three zeros. And we've laid it out in concentric circles. And at the centre of these circles is Christ. We are a Christ-centred mission. We do what Jesus did. We touch, reach out and touch and heal people affected by leprosy. And during 2018, I learned in such an amazing way to trust God, Jehovah Jireh. The Lord will provide, and he did provide in amazing ways. Our passage this morning comes from Matthew and continues the series from the centre of God's teaching known as the Sermon on the Mount. As Dawn reminded us last week, Jesus provides a Christian manifesto, a challenge to change our culture by living as followers of Jesus, living by his values and his priorities. That started me thinking about what we call in the development world first world problems. It often refers to trivial things that we who are privileged get complain about, get het up about. A few weeks ago, I was bemoaning the fact that my personal mobile wasn't working. Now, I have two. I have a work one and a personal one. And I was worried about how people would contact me. Well, they could phone me, text me, email me, WhatsApp me, message me through Facebook on my work phone. They could email me on my personal email. They could phone my landline. And I went into automatic pilot. I thought, I need to buy a new phone. But actually, I didn't. What I needed to do was take it to a little man who could repair it. And within an hour of leaving it in a little shop in St. Andrews, I had my phone back working perfectly well. First world problems. While there are poor in our communities, if you can read, you are better off than the 1 billion people in the world who can't. If you woke up this morning with more health than illness, then you are more blessed than the million people who will not survive this week, and even better off because we have the NHS that guarantees us healthcare in case of illness. If you have never experienced the danger of battle, the loneliness of imprisonment, the agony of torture, or the pangs of starvation, then you are ahead of the 500 billion people in this world. If you can attend any meeting, as we've done this morning, any meeting you want, political, religious or social, then you are luckier than 3 billion people in this world. If you have food in your refrigerator, clothes on your back, a roof over your head and a place to sleep, you are richer than 75% of this world. If you have money in the bank, money in your purse or wallet, and spare change in a dish somewhere, then you are among the top 8% of the world's wealthy. These are not statements to shame you, but to put many of our material woes into perspective. It makes me think how upside down our priorities can be. Considering today's reading, how does the arrangement of my or your priorities in life compare? Am I free to love God and release myself from the bond of wealth and things and stuff? Noah Ben-Shea is one of North America's most respected poet, philosopher, scholar and theologian, and he said this: either the key to a man's wallet is in his heart, or the key to a man's heart is in his wallet. So unless you express your charity, you are locked inside your greed. I'll repeat that. Either the key to a man's wallet is in his heart, or the key to a man's heart is in his wallet. So unless you express your charity, you are locked inside your greed. The term treasures in heaven is not a cloudy reference to some kindly thought in God's heart or some platitude, because God's kingdom will ultimately come on this earth. In all our uncertainty at the present moment, that is the one thing we can be sure of. God's kingdom will come. Treasures in heaven are things of worth in God's coming kingdom, such as justice, the opportunity for everyone to be productive, provision for everyone's needs, and respect for the dignity of every person. The implication is that we would do better to invest our money in activities that transform the world than in securities that protect our accumulated surplus. Is it wrong then to have a retirement portfolio or even to care about the material things of this world for yourselves and for others? The answer is both no and yes. The no comes from the fact that this passage is not the only passage in the Bible that speaks about the questions of wealth and the provisions of those who are dependent on us. Other passages counsel prudence and forethought, such as in Proverbs, those who gather little by little will increase their wealth, and the good leave an inheritance to their children's children. God guided Joseph to store up food for the 7 years of famine. Jesus speaks favourably in the parable of the talents about investment. And then there's the father's response to the prodigal son. In the light of the rest of Scripture, Matthew 6:19-34 cannot be a blanket prohibition. But the yes part of the answer is a warning summed up beautifully as, "Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." We might expect that sentence to be the other way round: where your heart is, there your treasure will be also. But Jesus' actual words are much more profound. Money changes the heart more than the heart decides how to handle money. Jesus' point is not you tend to put your money into things that matter to you, kingdom matters and priorities, but the possessions you own will change you so that you care more about them than other things. Choose carefully what you own, for inevitably you will begin to value it and to protect it to the potential detriment of everything else. Jesus here defines that tension. It is a question of worry. Worry about what's one's life or food or drink or clothing, worry about the bottom line that comes with these things, about having enough. What is enough? Can threaten to separate us from God. And this may take a number of forms: too much time earning, too much time managing, too much time spent on the spendable, too much time fretting over what is enough and even what to do with what one has. But in each case, worry keeps us from the right relationship with God. The antidote is to invest in ways that meet people's needs, to invest in companies that provide clean water, to invest in companies that provide well-made clothes. These are ways of investing in the kingdom. It also affects the way we shop. If we shop and buy things so cheaply, whether it be clothes or food, you are 99% sure that you're buying it to the cost of other people's well-being. We may need to invest in these things rather than in political motivated subsidies, overheated housing markets, or material shortages. This passage in Matthew is not a rule for portfolio management, but it does question our commitment to God and how the work of God's kingdom extends to how we manage what wealth we have. The question is what kind of attention you pay to your material needs and the accumulation of resources. We are told if you pay anxious attention, you are foolish. We are told if you let them display your trust in God, you are becoming unfaithful. We are told if you pay excessive attention to them, you're in danger of becoming greedy. And if you acquire them at the expense of other people, you are becoming the kind of person that God's kingdom rails against. How are we to discern the line between appropriate and inappropriate attention to wealth? God answers, strive first for the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you. First things first. Despite our large capacity for self-deception, this question can help us observe carefully where our treasure has put us. That will tell us something about our hearts. We're called to trust God for all things. Jesus gives a very clear command, don't be anxious. He repeats it 3 times in this passage, don't worry about money. And it's obvious that worrying about money is not a phenomenon of the 21st century. It's always been with us. Why shouldn't we worry? We could look at this passage for weeks. There are about 8 or 9 arguments for why we shouldn't worry. But let me summarise the 3 main arguments that form the basis for the others in this passage. One is practical and 2 are theological. The first one is worry doesn't do any good. Worry doesn't work. The second is God provides. And the third is God cares. The practical reason not to worry is, as I've said, it doesn't do any good anyway. Corrie Ten Boom said it well when she said, it doesn't empty tomorrow of its sorrow, but it empties today of its strength. Worry is all negative. It has no positive attributes. The best 2 reasons to trust God are theological, and Jesus tells us these 2 truths that if we could take on board totally, would remove all anxiety. God provides and God cares. Jesus points out that God has a pretty good track record of providing. Just think of how he's provided for the birds, the lilies, and the grass. If God does such a good job of providing for them, why is he not going to provide for us? Why do you think he'll have such a hard time providing for us? In 2018, in the Leprosy Mission Scotland, we had a very challenging start to the year financially. We knew we had big legacies coming, but they weren't coming quickly enough to help our cash flow. And at times I was worried about the ability, our ability to fund the projects we had committed to overseas, and even perhaps my ability to pay our salaries. But I kept believing and kept saying during staff meetings and our daily prayer time, God has provided for the leprosy mission since 1874. I have no reason to believe that he's not going to provide now. And we just kept our heads down, kept working, kept praying, and did our very best. And then one day, the blessings rained and started to rain in a wonderful way. And we ended up the year in the best the Leprosy Mission Scotland has ever been for a variety of reasons. And we were able to give away more money than we had promised, which is an amazing place to be. So now whenever I feel the anxiety rising, I just have to look back and to remember how God has provided for us in the past. And just hold on to the certainty that God will provide in the future. And in part that is because we are doing his work. We are Christ-centered and we are following his commands. The other big reason that Jesus gives is this: God cares. You are worth far more than the grass or the birds. He knows what you need. And just as he knows what they need, and I'm talking about needs. He knows what you need, not what you desire, not what you want, not what your greeds are, but what your needs are. And also note that although God provides for the birds, he doesn't drop their food into their nest for them. They don't just sit in their nest and God drops it into their nest. They have to go out and look for it. They have to work for it. God has all the resources of eternity at his fingertips. He has given us his Son. He has offered us eternal life. Jesus was willing to give up his life for us. How will he not then graciously give us all things? The basic message that this passage communicates to us is don't worry. And when I say that, I have the song in my mind, "Don't Worry, Be Happy." We can trust God for the future. Jim Elliot, who gave up his life serving God, said, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain that which he cannot lose." However, our ability to trust God, perhaps our ability on to the level of our trust of God, depends on our viewpoint of God, how we see God. If we have an inappropriate view of God, we will have a lower trust in God. What do I mean by that? Many of you will know that I was in Angola in January, and we had a very traumatic time. My close colleague had a stroke sitting two seats away from me and then died a few days later. But on the day Faustino had his stroke, we were in a large government-run meeting surrounded by lots of people. And some of these people were pastors. And these pastors gathered together to pray for Faustino's healing and his well-being and his family. And I thought that was a really good thing to do until I heard that one of the pastors was railing against God as to why was he punishing his servant. What had his servant done to be punished in this way? Now, I do not in any way think that God got up that morning, and don't panic, I know that God doesn't sleep, but God did not decide that Friday morning to zap Faustino with a stroke. That happened because we live in a fallen world with disease and illness. But that pastor's viewpoint of God was as a judge who was punishing Faustino and therefore punishing his organisation, Soli Angola, and therefore punishing the work of the leprosy mission, therefore punishing the healthcare for people affected by leprosy in Angola, and therefore punishing people affected by leprosy. That is not how our God works. How do you see God? Do you see God as a judge who's waiting to trip you up? Or do you see God as the father in the parable of the prodigal son? Do you see God as a father who loves you, who cares for you, who will provide for you, who is loving, forgiving, and absolutely extravagant in his provision for us? If you struggle to see God as an extravagant father, I suggest You sit with a paper and pen and you start to count your blessings. List your blessings, as the old hymn says, count them one by one, and then develop an attitude of gratitude. And if you can't come up with a huge list of blessings, come and speak to me, because I feel we need to have a conversation. I feel we need to pray. To finish with, I'm going to share about the Heal Nepal project. And you've got a leaflet on your table. And this is a project that we are in partnership with the UK government through UKAID, our colleagues in England and Wales in Northern Ireland. And because of DFID, that is the UKAID, because of their rules, they'll only work with one part of the organisation, and that is England and Wales. So all funding is going through England and Wales. So that is wonderful for England and Wales. It will be wonderful for the project in Nepal, because for every £1,000 we make, the government will double that to a tune of £1 million. So if we raise £1 million, the government, the UK government, will double it and match it with another £1 million. But that means for Scotland and for Northern Ireland that we have no real income source from the 27th of January until the 27th of April. That is 3 months. That is a quarter of my income. What does that do to my cash flow? What does that do to our ability to fund other projects? Well, all I can say is that the outcome of last year set us up in a really good position for that. We were able to promise this year to give away more, knowing that the extra money going to various countries like Bangladesh, we had sitting in our reserves and could guarantee it for 3 years. For the extra money that we're giving to research so that we can break transmission and see zero transmission, we could guarantee for 3 years because the money is sitting in our reserves. And we were fully trusting God that if this was the right thing to do, and we had no reason to believe it wasn't, that all things would work out. We started January 2019 with our best income in a January, I think I can remember, in 21 years. And then on Monday this week, when we had such an attitude of gratitude, we had an even bigger legacy come in. God is providing in wonderful ways because we trusted him and we took a hit for the team. We took a hit on the benefit of England and Wales, the work in Nepal, and most importantly, people affected by leprosy. So I'm going to show a video clip that's just reminding you that the UK, if you give us a donation in the envelope this morning, any donation has to be made payable to England and Wales, and we will send it to them, and the government will double it. Don't miss this opportunity to have your donation doubled, because if you've been reading anything in the press in the days of late, this could be the last time we have international aid in the UK with an amount of money able to actually do this. I want to talk a little bit about Nepal. Many of you know the project Nanandaband. Roz has visited it. Nepal is one of the most beautiful countries in the world, with amongst the greatest people, very friendly, but it's also one of the least developed countries in the world. And almost all Nepalese live in small villages, most of them high up in the mountains, and outside of Kathmandu, there are no other cities. And during the earthquake in April 2015, we in Scotland, thanks to people like you, raised an amazing amount of money, as did the whole of the Global Fellowship, and we treated thousands of people, 18,000 people in Nanandaband hospital. The hospital had been destroyed. The staff had lost their homes, but they still managed to treat all comers. And because of our outreach work up into the mountains and into new areas, they reached thousands more than we would normally have reached. And that means that the number of people coming to the hospital in Anandaband has increased to 40,000 a year. It's doubled. But the staff haven't doubled. It's the same number of staff who are working tremendously hard to keep things going. And the current situation is unsustainable. They are still operating in the corridor because the theatre hasn't been repaired yet. But during the earthquake, we were sure that we had been called to be a bright light and to reach out to those in the shadows, either the shadows because of poverty or the shadows because of leprosy. And Anandaband is built high into the mountain, and it was built the other side of Kathmandu because the King of Kathmandu, when he allowed it to be built in 1957, didn't want the spirits of those with leprosy looking over Kathmandu, so he stuck it round the corner out the way. However, the work of the hospital is unmissable. And this is what is said. This sign has been up. It's a quote from Mother Teresa. And this sign has been up longer than I've been visiting Anandaband, which is will be 21 years in the beginning of March. And if it's too small to read, I'll read it to you. People affected by leprosy are the most important visitors in our premises. They are not dependent on us. We are dependent on them. Service to them is the purpose of our work. They are not outsiders to our service. They are part of it. We are not doing them a favour by serving them. They are giving us the opportunity to serve. And that notice in both Nepali and English is passed by each of the 40,000 visitors that come in. And that is one reason that Anandaband is so successful. It reaches people with a care and a compassion and a respect and the love of Christ. And this is a film that's been made by Palm Roads about Heal Nepal. So by using this envelope and either giving it to me today or posting it to the address on the bottom, which is Peterborough, your donation will be matched. £24 finds and cures one person with leprosy. That would be doubled to £48 in two people. £320 brings a life-changing operation in physiotherapy as RAM received, which would be also doubled. And to run one bed in the hospital would be £3,500. Your money will go double because of UK aid, but your money goes a long, long way in countries like Nepal. So thank you for your wonderful support. And I pray that, in fact, I'll close in prayer, that each one of us will have an attitude of gratitude and actually realise the amazing provision our loving God has for us. Let's pray. God, you are good. God, you are here. God, you love us, and you love us unconditionally. You love us despite of our misunderstandings of you. You love us despite the fact we always don't see you as we should. We don't see you in your fullness. We don't see other people as beloved by you. When we tend to only care for those around us, for our immediate family, perhaps our extended family, perhaps our neighbours and our community, but perhaps not to the ends of the earth as Jesus has commanded us to. help us to realise the huge number of blessings that each and every one of us has. Help us to not to look to others, because when we look to others, somehow we always look to people who we feel are better off than ourselves, and not to those who perhaps we can feel that are worse off than ourselves. Help us to have a real attitude of gratitude for your blessings, for all the wealth that we have, all the good things in our lives, and help us to share that with others. Help us not to grasp it so tight that we're in danger of losing it and breaking it, but to hold it loosely. Help us when we have a surplus, not to build a wall around it, but to build a bigger table and invite more people in. Help us always to know that your love is never ending, that when we share your love and your goodness and your provisions with others, it's like the widow's jar of oil. It will never come to an end, because your blessings are new every morning. They are new each and every morning, and we never have to worry about your presence with us, your love for us, and your provision to us. May we live like lights bright on the hill. May we share our well-being with others, and may our world and our culture, our families, our workplaces, our schools and universities, our neighbourhoods be richer because we have shared your love and your provision. Change us this day into people who will change our culture, who will change our world.